hunt them down before they even got back to the bridge.
Be close, boss.
Sure, sure. What's the odds? This side of the bridge or that side, no matter which it is. We can split them up. Maybe chill some.
Rafe picked up the glass and looked through it once more. A shaft of sunlight darted through the chem clouds and illuminated the valley, turning the dull metal of the rails to glittering silver and giving him a better view of the attacking group.
One's got red hair, boss, and one's got white hair, or some kind of white hat with...
Triple stoop son of a pox gaudy slut! That's the Snowhead Kid, Jack!
6 in all, cheat!
The sun went in again, and it was no longer possible to see with any clarity. Strasser picked up his Russian sniper's rifle from the three-legged table.
Doesn't matter. We'll go for him. Here's how we do it.
Strasser couldn't resist the bait that was dangled ahead of him. The idea that he could take Ryan Cotter out in the open, helpless, was too attractive. To take power over the helpless was Court Strasser's idea of paradise. But he was too careful to risk his own neck out there. With Rafe, Rosa, and one of his gunmen, named Mendoza, Strasser retreated deeper into what had once been a trendy little tourist town. One of its attractions had been a military museum, and Strasser had been delighted to find a small Arma wag from World War II that he'd been able to put into running order. It was now fueled up and ready to go, just in case something went wrong. All the remaining survivors of his gang were aboard the train, 4 in the driving cab, and the rest scattered along the coaches, the barrels of their M16s protruding through the windows. Strasser had ordered them to raise steam, but not engage the forward gear until the needle on the gauge was teetering into the red. It was a matter of fine judgment for the black-clad former sec boss of Moxon to wait until Ryan and the others were fully committed, out in the open. He had not let them close enough for the one-eyed man to use his lethal long gun. The distance from the bridge to the Ville was about 2.5 miles. From a standing start, the locomotive would reach the bridge in somewhere near 4 minutes and 30 seconds. Ryan and his companions couldn't hope to cover a half mile of rough ground in less than 5 minutes. Rafe watched carefully through the glass.
About a half a mile, boss.
Give them the signal.
The sallow-faced man leaned out of the window and fired off the stubby Very pistol. The loco wag began to move into shuddering life. From their high observation point, Strasser and the other three watched and waited, seeing the tiny dots halt, and then begin to move quickly back along the tracks.
We'll take them. What's in that hut by the bridge? Not a place they can hole up in, is it, Mendoza?
No chance, boss. Just full of junk. Railroad stuff. Beats up wood and rail, rags and grease and stuff.
Strasser turned slowly, his eyes blazing. Mendoza backed away, seeing death in the etched lines of uncontrollable rage.
What? What's that?
Just the stuff in...
The whip tore across Mendoza's face, opening the flesh of his cheek with the silky ease of a razor. Blood gushed over the man's shirt as he lifted his hand to the deep gash.
Boss, why?
You said grease, idiot!
Yeah?
Strasser looked away, watching his train as it gathered momentum across the floor of the valley, the smoke streaming behind it, his nails clenched into the palms of his hands with impotent anger as his tactical mind saw the threat. Ryan's plan was simple. Even with a good glass, he knew they couldn't identify everyone at such range, or even count them accurately if they kept moving. He also knew that when it came to the sprint, Doc and Mildred wouldn't keep up, so they talked it through. As soon as they saw the jetting of smoke that told them the loco was on the move, they all began to run back toward the bridge. But once they'd covered 150 yards, Doc and Mildred cut away along a narrow deer trail to the left, vanishing among the trees, leaving JB, Christy, and Jack to run on alone.
Rafe!
Boss?
Go and get the Alma wag ready.
Strasser turned to Mendoza.
And stop that fucking blood, will you? Rosa, wipe his face.
The woman stood and walked languidly across the floor, touched the stream of crimson with her finger, raised it to her lips, and sucked at it, eyes half closed. Rafe hesitated in the doorway.
Why aren't we waiting, boss?
Because I think Ryan Cotter's thought up an ace on the line for us.
But how?
Strasser didn't reply, and his lieutenant walked quickly from the building.
How?
Just watch, Rosa.
As he ran, Ryan was conscious of the sticky, slippery grease that coated his hands. He tried to wipe some of it off on the tufts of dry grass near the end of the bridge, but there hadn't been that much time. A risky glance over his right shoulder told him that the train was gaining fast. Its brightly painted cowcatcher ate up the yards as it thundered closer to them. Even in that one stolen look, he saw the white puff of smoke from a rifle fired by someone leaning from the window of the cab, but he wasn't aware of the bullet coming anywhere near. Christy sprinted lightly at Ryan's elbow, her hair like streaks of living fire.
Gonna be close.
Jack tried to look behind at the train and tripped over some loose ballast, recovering his balance with miraculous agility. Ryan wished that he'd hidden the G-12 caseless before setting out on the dangerous scheme. The strap was loose, and the butt kept jolting him in the small of his back. But there was no time now for second thoughts or hesitation. They were less than 400 yards from the end of the bridge, but the locomotive was huffing and puffing at their heels. Ryan didn't hear the sound of the shot above the noise of the pounding engine, but he saw the flick of dust at the edge of the track, where it was overgrown with twining weeds. From the rattling, jerking cab of the loco wag, it was good enough shooting. Now he saw JB kneeling in the undergrowth among some laden thimbleberry bushes, holding his Steyr pistol in his right hand, waiting patiently for the moment. The runners were 20 yards from their mark, a strip of ragged cloth tied to the lower branch of one of the adjacent pinyon pines. There had once been a U-shaped drainage ditch, but over the years it had been partly filled with leaf mold and blown earth. But it was still a deep hollow, more than 6 feet across. Ryan saw that the steel at their feet was now dulled with a thick layer of smeared grease, grease that ran all the way onto the towering trestle bridge over the gorge.
Watch your feet on the rails!
A bullet hit the oiled metal by Ryan's feet and sang, sparking off into the shadowed gloom beneath the trees.
Shit!
They'd reached the mark, and all three dove together into the soft dirt of the hole. The lumbering bulk of the loco wag was above them. Normally, at the speed that it was traveling, the train would have had no problems in grinding swiftly to a halt, giving the surviving members of Strasser's gang a good chance of pursuing and killing Ryan and his companions. But the thick layer of age-old grease and oil that had smothered the rails gave the braking system no chance. From cover, Ryan crouched to watch the last carriage roll past them. He glimpsed a swarthy face, peering at him boggle-eyed from the observation car at the back. The wheels were no longer revolving, skidding along the rails, drawing ever closer to the high bridge where J.B. Dix was waiting. Back at the Ville, Kurt Strasser stared back, stone-faced, seeing events unfold precisely as he'd feared.
Go, baby, go.
Christy craned her neck to watch the sliding locomotive.
They'll jump.
Doubt it. They'll be pissed, but they won't guess.
The cowcatcher on the front of the loco wag was now moving onto the bridge, the ponderous weight making the entire structure quiver and shake. To the side, JB narrowed his eyes behind the glinting lenses of his spectacles, finger curling over the trigger of the 5.6mm blaster. He'd be aiming for the chunk of Plasex that was jammed between two of the main bracing timbers. JB always tried to keep up his supply of armaments whenever he could, but he'd run perilously low on the high-impact explosive. In another half minute, he'd know whether he'd had enough. Now the train had reached the end of the greased strips of steel, its wheels finally beginning to bite and slow its impetus. The front of the locomotive was virtually in the middle of the bridge, the wheels spinning again as the driver slammed the engine into reverse.
Now.
Here goes nothing.
JB winced instinctively, ready for the expected explosion. But nothing happened. He peered through the branches.
Shit.
There was a gouged splinter of white wood about a half inch below the dark shape of the Plasex. The armorer took careful aim and fired again, conscious that the ornate train was already beginning to crawl backward from the bridge. JB had placed the Plasex with the greatest care, picking a spot where main timbers would be torn apart, ripping away supporting cables and iron bars. Ryan climbed onto the track, staring at the drama beginning to slowly unfold before him. Christy and Jack were at his side, and Doc and Mildred were jogging down behind them. The bridge began to unfold itself like a child's tower of twigs. Wires twanged and parted, and metal twisted and sheared. Wood splintered, sending showers of dust into the gorge. Hundreds of century-old nails and screws were projected from the collapsing bridge, pattering hundreds of feet into the air, falling all around the stunned watchers. Slowly, the train began to tilt to the right.
Gaia, that's such a sad